This is Shamir Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Hey everybody, I'm hanging with Trey Ratcliffe. He runs the number one travel blog on the internet. Trey, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you today?
I am awesome. And I just have to say, I so appreciate you being willing to chat with me, especially because you have pneumonia right now. Wow.
Yeah, I just got out of the hospital 2 days ago, of all things. I normally get sick, but I think I've just been running too hard, and I'm just getting too old. I'm not the young man I used to be.
Well, for the benefit of our listening audience, Trey runs stuckincustoms.com, and he's known as a photographer, an artist, a writer, an adventurer. Trey, your work is just so inspiring, and I'm really excited to have this chat with you.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited too. I just absolutely love taking photos. I'm just obsessed with it, and I also like talking about it. It's just nice. It's a nice talking sport, you know. It's just I can't get enough of it, so I'm ready to go.
Awesome. And actually, before I get to the questions, I just wanted to bring this up. So your vision, you were born blind in one eye, correct?
Yes, and I still only see out of my left eye, but I call it the gift, you know, because of course I see in 2D, in two dimensions, and right. I have my whole life. But you know, if you think about it kind of philosophically, a lot of the people now experience the world in 2D because every year we spend more and more time staring at a laptop screen or our phones or whatever, and that's all really a 2D representation of a 3D world. And so if you're able to, you know, properly interpret a 3D world into a 2D photo as a photographer and make it obvious to people, then, you know, it's a little bit of a gift, I think. And I think that there's lots of photographers that have kind of mastered this either naturally or over time, composition and whatnot. And so I think it's been great because it's been very easy for me to always to represent a 3D world. Because, of course, that's how my brain has to do it. So I don't trip over rocks and stuff while I walk around.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. You know, I've chatted with photographers who are colorblind, for example, and just the process that they'd have to go through to translate their image, it just fascinates me. It really does.
Yeah, I know a few colorblind photographers too. I don't know how the heck they do it. Something else though. Yeah, that's another beast right there.
I'm telling you. Well, first of all, let's have the audience learn more about you. For those few who may not know about you, give us an overview of yourself, your background, and I guess just how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, well, I should start out by just saying I'm a totally regular guy, regular dude. I do not take myself too seriously at all, which I think is a really important part of the whole equation.
That's awesome.
And, you know, my background is different. I am computer science and math. That's what I studied at university and majored in. And then I had sort of a traditional IT life, I guess, with Anderson Consulting, which is now called Accenture, and did different technology consulting. I was entrepreneurial and started a few different tech companies, you know, most of which were total failures, but I always learned a lot. And really, in my mid-30s is when I got my first DSLR. I'm 43 now, by the way. I just loved photography. I thought this is really fun. And I immediately started post-processing the photos pretty hard and getting into this thing called HDR, which I loved, which was quite a nascent and inchoate at the time. You know, now it's a known factor, a known quantity, but back then it wasn't. And I started this blog called Stuck in Customs, which, you know, nobody went to for the first few years, just me and my mom. But then it got pretty popular. I started getting more and more followers, and I just can't believe it. I think now we're up to around 14 million followers total across all the networks, and you know, Google keeps track of views up there on top of my Google page. And I think we just passed 80 billion views with a B, which is just beyond belief. And yeah, it's just great. I'm glad people enjoy the images. I'm glad people like learning how to take better photos. And you know, I either mix it up with just photos, or sometimes lessons or tips or tutorials. And yeah, this is a great movement in photography. I think everyone just loves this idea of blending together the fantasy world and the real world. At least that's the kind of take I have on it.
Absolutely. And you know, whenever I look at your work, I always think of photography and art kind of crossing lines together, especially with your post-processing, which I think is beautiful, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, I think that the natural state of humans is sort of this childlike state where everything is fantastical and it's not clear what is real and what's not real. And I think like right on that veil is where the truth is. And so that's what I try to do with my photos. I try to make them kind of right in between these two worlds. Now, you know, I'm actually a very hated photographer. There's lots of realists that think I'm the devil for post-processing and for showing people how to post-process and all this kind of stuff. But I, you know, I don't care about these people. I just love it. I think that it is a beautiful world. I think that there is a truth in between the two worlds. And I live right in that fantasy world. And that's what I do with my kids. That's what I do with my photos. It just feels right to me.
And you know, Trey, that's when you know you're making a real impact, when you have people who call you the devil, as you so call it. You know, I mean, that's your work is, as many people as there are that may not like your work, I'm sure there are many, many more who absolutely love your work and identify with it personally.
Well, I think this is a good thing for new photographers to think about, is that, you know, I think a lot of new photographers, I actually know this, is they put their work out there and they really want it to be critiqued by the status quo or their peers or whatever. But generally, my advice is to ignore what all your peers have to say, because each of these peers has their own artistic baggage that they're carrying around with them. And they'll, you know, give you some feedback which may or may not even be useful or correct. And, you know, young photographers or new photographers, they just kind of soak up everything and they'll get conflicting advice. And, you know, as a new photographer, you might really be onto something unique with your style or your composition or something that you're doing. And maybe no one gets it. And everyone will say, no, well, you should really make your photos more like this or more like that. If you don't watch out, you know, you'll end up just kind of making everybody happy by trying to follow everyone's advice. And then all your work will be, you know, designed by committee. And that's why you never see a statue of a committee.
That's true. You're taking me back to my art school days where we would be up for critique. And I, you know, it made me tougher. It definitely did. But I do know the feeling of being pulled in a million different directions and kind of losing a sense of your own voice.
Yeah, look, the truth is that you know what is beautiful inside. And most of the advice you get from other people is either idiotic or just totally wrong. You know, everyone thinks they're an expert on everything, right? But you don't need to be told what's beautiful or interesting, do you? I mean, like if you start dating a guy, for example, you don't need a committee to tell you whether or not he's a good, you just know. You know, if you walk by a beautiful flower, you don't need to talk to a bunch of people and say, is this a pretty flower? You just know. You know the truth of the beauty inside your heart and inside your mind and inside your soul. And the more you work with photography, the more that this will come out and the more the truth will become known. And I find people spend way too much time and energy trying to impress their peers when their opinion is one of the least important factors in you discovering yourself through your own art and your own photography.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm curious, Trey, you mentioned that you majored or you studied computer science and math. And eventually you picked up your first DSLR when you were mid-30s, I think 35. There's quite a leap there. There's quite a jump. How did you get from, I guess, what made you pick up a camera in the first place?
Well, even though I was kind of trapped in that left brain world, you know, I've always, I guess, been kind of clever or whatever. And, you know, if you're in that world where you're making money or you're professional or whatever, for being clever, getting stuff done with your left brain, you know, that kind of continues to build on itself. And maybe every year you get more and more money, or you get trapped in a career that you didn't ever really mean to be trapped in anyway. You accidentally become an expert in an area you never wanted to become an expert in. So you kind of get trapped in that industry. Well, that was sort of me. But the whole time, I kind of had this soft throbbing in the base of my skull that I was meant to do something else, that I was meant to do something great. And I would look around me and see great people doing great stuff all the time and think like, well, why is it that me? Or, you know, what am I supposed to be doing? I just feel like I'm flailing around in my career, like I'm stumbling around. Well, now I can look back and see that I was stumbling into, you know, my own greatness. And I think that's the same for everybody, is that if you feel like there's something artistic you're meant to be doing, well, it's probably true. And the more time and effort you put into this, you don't just find that you create art, but you create yourself. And it's a wonderful alpha to omega. And the longer you resist it, I think the worse it is for yourself and your soul.
Stumbling into your own greatness. I love it. That is awesome. And how do you find inspiration around you? How do you get yourself inspired on a daily basis? Because I believe you post photos daily to your site. So how do you get inspired for that every day?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, my site is, I cue stuff up, okay? I really do only take photos and post-process photos when the muse visits. I know some people have, like, I got to take a photo every day kind of thing. And I think that kind of discipline is good maybe for some kind of people, but it really depends on what kind of mind you have. Sometimes I'm just feeling super creative and I just had this endless fount of energy. And then I just go crazy. You know, I take hundreds or thousands of photos. Some days I'm feeling kind of post-processy, and I'll sit in front of my computer in my studio and light candles, listen to weird music, and, you know, process photos till 4 a.m. But some days I just kind of feel sort of blah. You know, I'll just lay on the couch with some nice European drinking chocolate and just let the world float away. But yeah, I just, you know, I think you just get sensitive to your rhythms and to what makes sense and what you want to do. And I think if you're just kind of in that flow of yourself and you don't fight it too much, and you just kind of go with the flow of the universe, that, you know, the creativity comes to you. There's this idea that, you know, no individual themselves, and I actually feel like this, I don't feel like I'm creative at all. I just feel like sometimes I get into the flow and I kind of channel the overall creativity of the universe. I think if you're open to it, like sometimes it's not even me that creates it. I just happen to be there and I happen to be happy and open and vulnerable, and I can just create these things just because I'm in the right spot at the right time and I feel the right way. And I think that's important, that it's a big idea that it's actually not you that creates it. You just kind of channel it.
So when you're in this flow and you're taking your photos, how do you know, I guess for you personally, what makes a great photo stand out from just an average photo? How do you know when you have that it photo?
Well, the more you practice photography over time, the more you start to realize the good from the bad. And nowadays, the iterative cycle for becoming good at photography is so fast. Everything's digital. You know, if you go out on a day, you take 100 photos, you come back and you jam them into Lightroom and you pick out your two or three favorite. Well, that process in itself is incredibly cathartic, in that you are able to, you know, take 100 photos, come back and choose the best. Well, this is a very good process, because inside you just know what is the best. Well, this will build on itself. And the next time you go out to take 100 more photos, you'll start to think like, I have a feeling this will be the best, or maybe this will be the best. Or you might take a photo and go like, that was kind of a throwaway photo. I don't know why I took that one, right? Now, when you rinse and repeat this hundreds of times, right, you get into the thousands, tens of thousands of photos, then when you're out on location and you take a shot, you know, now I just know. I'm like, this is a winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You know, and I might take, you know, a couple hundred photos and just kind of like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, I should just go ahead and grab that just in case, like a just in case shot, you know. But every now and then you get something like, that is it. You know, that's the omega point. And then you're just excited to go home and process it. You just know. And over time, it just becomes a very natural thing.
You just know. That's so true. You're giving me validation over here because ever since, I've always loved art. I didn't get into photography until college. However, I've always been an artsy, wanting to sketch and paint. And ever since I was little, I always knew when I was onto something because I just, in a sense, I had this feeling in my belly, is what I called it. I hope I'm not getting too abstract, but it was this feeling and it was distinct. And I knew when I was really creating something that resonated with me. And then I went into art school and learned a ton there, but I always kind of, in the back of my mind, I would wonder if the feeling in my belly was enough. Like if I look at a photo, I'm telling myself, I need to know this is great because of the composition and the lighting, but what you said really just expresses it clearly. You just know. It just resonates with you.
Yeah, you got it.
Awesome. Well, let's chat about the tools of the trade. What's your typical go-to gear that you like to take around with you?
Well, my go-to gear has not yet arrived at my residence here in New Zealand, but I am really excited about the new A7R Mark II. Currently, I do use the Sony A7R. I used to be all Nikon all the time, but I tell you what, these Sony mirrorless cameras are da bomb. I'm not just saying that because they're smaller and lighter, like a fourth of the size and weight and all that stuff, lenses and that sort of stuff. But really, the image quality is unbelievable. Just as good, if not better, than back when with my Nikon. I think I'm getting sharper photos now. I love the electronic viewfinder. You can do so much with that thing. I can put pretty much any lens I want to on there. I've started putting a lot of Leica lenses on my Sony A7R, which I love. It's a very simple converter. Those Leica lenses are unbelievable, and yeah, I just love it. It's fantastic. Of course, the size factor is amazing too, because it's just so easy to go out and take photos without having to lug all that glass around.
I've heard good things. I've definitely heard good things about those.
Yeah,
Cool.
I'm not sponsored by Sony. I don't anything. They do send me free cameras, but everyone sends me free cameras, so that's a non-factor. It really is the best. For example, I just got back from about a month in Antarctica. I flew down there and was on the main continent, and I may never get back to Antarctica, and I want to take the best. I'm fine carrying all the heavy Nikon stuff, but I chose Sony because it is the best, and I feel like I came back with really strong images thanks to the Sony system.
Now, what is your favorite photography accessory other than your camera? And tell us why.
I don't know when this interview comes out, but there may or may not be a secret photography bag that is coming to a Kickstarter near you. All right.
Ooh.
So, just jump over to my website, look at my bag area, and I'll be linking over to this thing. I cannot say anything more than that, but I can say that this has been in design for a very long time. We have some amazing and very secret partners. And, I've always wanted the ultimate camera bag. And I've got, I go through bags. I feel like women go through shoes. Got this whole closet full. I really get in touch with my feminine side with all my bag usage. But none of them have quite fit the bill. And I mean, this one has got some real awesome innovation in it. I won't say anything more, but this is by far my favorite thing.
Can I ask, did you have a hand in creating or designing the bag?
Yes, absolutely. That's one reason I'm pretty excited about it, just because there's a few features I've always wanted. Because I'm a little travel-y, I move around a lot, and I really want convenient access to all my stuff. And I've never really found the perfect bag until this one's come along, and I think it will really resonate with a lot of people. I mean, even if you're a DSLR shooter, this will still work for you great, but man, I want to tell you so much stuff about it, but I can't. My lips are sealed.
The suspense builds. Well, I'll check it out. You said there is or there will be a link on your website.
There will be a
Okay.
link on the website, probably starting around July 1st, because we're actually organizing a huge promotional campaign around this. All your listeners are welcome to come out. We are doing a cross coast-to-coast photo walk in the USA. So we're going to hit 12 of the biggest cities in the U.S. We're actually renting this, leasing this huge kind of rock star bus that sleeps 12 people. We have a driver and everything. So we're going to hit, you know, everywhere from New York to D.C. to Philly to Chicago, Atlanta, Miami, Dallas, San Antonio, Phoenix, San Francisco, Burning Man, and L.A. And we're going to be running around, and it's going to be great. You know, these photo walks have gotten huge. We get hundreds and hundreds of people out for these things. And so we'll be promoting this. We may or may not be promoting this secret bag. We don't know. But it's going to be awesome.
Did I hear Detroit in there? Did I miss that?
It was like logistically difficult to get. We looked at like two cities. There's three areas that are really hard to get to on a cross country bus tour. And there's Denver, Detroit, and Portland and Seattle. They're just tough logistically.
Oh, that's okay. I forgive you.
Sorry about that. I do like Detroit there. I lived in a year in Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ann Arbor's a cool city. Yeah, that's where I went to school. Yep.
Right on. Yeah, I did like it down there.
Excellent. Well, next, let's chat about your post-production workflow. Can you describe what your process is like? I think you mentioned candles and a dark room earlier, but what else goes into it?
Well, there may or may not be some mushrooms and hallucinogens and
of course.
Psilocybin involved. No. So what I do is, and this is the same thing that I kind of teach on the website. We have some tutorials, like an HDR tutorial and many others. But really, sort of HDR and post-processing is just the beginning of it. And it's a very unique process, I must say, in that a lot of people have like step-by-step guides where you just follow along like a zombie. I think that is not the right way to do it. So basically, here's the idea. And the overall purpose of it is that your photo, your final photo, should be a reflection of your ever-evolving personality, your ever-evolving history, your ever-evolving artistic creative self. So in essence, your final photo will come out looking differently than my final photo or anybody else's by following this technique. And here's the general technique, I'll tell you, just in broad brush strokes. One, you might want to go ahead and auto bracket the scene, you know, because it's just nice to get all the light that's really there. Because it's hard for a camera in a single exposure to get all the light that's there, especially in a dynamically lit situation. So you get multiple shots. So step one is you create an HDR out of it, right? You kind of create a tone mapped image, right? And you create something that you kind of like. You might not love it. You might only like 80% of it or 50% of it, but you create something that has something that gets you going, right? And then you go back into Lightroom, and you might take the middle exposure, and you might create a really cool version of that in Lightroom, something that you really like. You might run a really hard filter on it. You might just make some subtle adjustments. But you make something that you also like in Lightroom. I call it like an idea, or sort of an offering. And now you have two different versions of the photo, right? You have your Lightroom one, and you have your Photomatix one, just for example. And then you might bring those both into Photoshop, and then you pick and pull different areas from different photos, and you kind of merge them, you kind of Frankenstein them together into a final vision, which will be totally unique, you know, based on whatever you think. And then on top of that, you might want to add some more plug-in action, like some MacFun or some Topaz action, and really tweak out different areas of the photo. Again, you might not want to run the filter on the entire image. I mean, you do have to initially, but then you might just want to mask in those areas that you find interesting, right? Different parts of the photo require different kinds of treatment. And there should be some sort of transition as the viewer's eye moves across it from, you know, softness to sharpness or coolness to warmth, some sort of transitionary period from less saturation to more saturation. And so you can kind of tell this visual story by mixing and matching a lot of different post-processing techniques.
I don't know if you could hear my pen scribbling furiously. That was a really good breakdown.
Oh, good. Well, awesome. I hope that makes sense to people. I think maybe people that aren't used to doing post-processing, it might sound overwhelming. But I think one thing to think about, too, is to approach some of these tools with a childlike fascination. You know, don't be afraid. Just go in there and push all the buttons and move all the sliders around violently to see what they do and just go have a good time. I find a lot of people are like a little scared to use these tools because they're like, I don't really know what's going on with this thing or whatever. But really, I think if you embrace it and kind of have fun with it, that it can be incredibly liberating, and it'll just make you smile and laugh sometimes. You'll just click some of these presets. You'll be like, whoa, like, you know, that looks terrible, or this is awesome, or look at that one part. That part's super cool. You know, just have fun with it and dance with it, and then everything will work out nicely.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Topaz. I do enjoy Topaz quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of fun stuff you can do. Like, I just got Topaz Glow. Have you used that?
Oh, is that the new one that came out? No, I haven't used that one yet. It looked awesome, though.
It does like all this really weird neon fibrous oil painting type stuff to your photo. So you might do this, and it gives you a completely different looking photo, which you might add as a layer on top, and then maybe you can mix it like with an overlay blend mode.
Mm-hmm.
You just get this wicked like result that you've never seen before. So anyways, they're really just fun to experiment with.
Awesome. Well, next, let's talk about the business aspect of photography, particularly for you. What would you, because you have your hands in quite a bit, at least from what I've seen. You're a busy guy. What's the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself?
Well, I don't really talk about the business side much because I'm not one of these guys that, you know, sells ebooks on how to make money with photography or, you know, how to get rich off weddings or any of that stuff. I really don't. I will mention it briefly though, because I know people are interested. And also, as far as I can tell, I'm a little bit of an anomaly in the world, because a lot of the stuff that I do is never advice that I would give. Like, for example, I don't have any clients. I have clients approach me a lot that want me to do work for them, you know, go take photos of a product or a service or an event. And I always say no. I have made one exception for Air New Zealand. Air New Zealand, ever since I moved here, I have sort of a soft spot for them. I went and did a shoot for them in Hobbiton where we dressed up all the stewardesses like elves. And it was a really fun thing. And so that was sort of an exception, but I was still able to dictate a lot of stuff. But generally, you know, if you're a photographer and a client wants to come to you and pay you a few $1,000 to take photos of some boots or something, I think you should say yes. Sounds like a great idea. All right. But then the only downside of that is you become completely dependent upon clients. And when you're not actually working for a client, you have like free time. Well, should you be using this free time to go get more clients? Or should you be using this free time to work on the photography that you really want to work on? And then if you are working on some artistic stuff that you really want to work on, you kind of have this guilt like, oh my God, I should really be using this time to get more clients. So there's a little bit of a tension there, which I think is unhealthy. And also, in a way, if you start to associate your camera with taking like baby photos, and let's say that you really don't like taking photos of babies, you might be good at it. But if you're really not into it, then you start to have this sort of negative association with you and your camera and babies. And it's just sort of this negative feedback cycle. You know, you might not hate it, but it might not be your calling. But anyway, so my advice is like, if you have a client, I think that's it seems to be a pretty good steady way to make money. You know, same with weddings or this sort of thing. But I've never really done that. I've always owned all the rights to my photos, which means that I'm able to license them in different ways. But I guess we have about four or five different revenue streams. One of them is we do fine art sales for large format photographs. We do this out of Germany. We have 21 of the works. We only have three available of each one, and these range in price from $75,000 to $95,000 each. They're very big. You know, they print 3 meters across, or it's, you know, 8 to 10 feet across. They're giant, very special printing situation. Actually, we have a little video over on TreyRatcliffe.com that shows how they're printed. But that does great. You know, that's a seven-figure business. We do, you know, we do tutorials because people always want to know how I do this kind of stuff. So I take time every year and make sure that I spend at least 5 or 10% of my time teaching, either making videos or doing kind of live in-person events. And the tutorials seem to do really well. People like them. Always get a good response from those. I have a bunch of books out and another book coming out soon, and those always do well, either ebooks or real books.
Mm-hmm.
We license photos, usually sort of reactively. We kind of wait for incoming requests to come in. We don't really have a licensing department. I guess we could, but we haven't gotten around to that. But yeah, I guess those are just a few of the ways.
That was an awesome answer. You know, I love asking this question in part because it gives me a glimpse into how different photographers run their own business. And with you, as I was listening, it sounds like you've got the lifestyle down. Like it's a lifestyle choice, whether you take clients or whether you decide not to take clients, or if you're, you know, selling your fine art or creating tutorials. And you mentioned a tension that's there as far as if you're taking clients that you don't particularly like. What was your example? Taking baby photos. If you hate doing it but you're good at it and it pays good money and you take it on anyway, and it's like this cycle that you find yourself in, where when you do have free time, you kind of feel like you should be looking for more clients instead of doing something that you really love. And you know, I appreciate that you were brave enough to say that. It's something for me personally, it's taken me years to even allow myself to think that, because I've been in those shoes. And I don't know, it sounds like you've gone, as far as the direction that you've taken, like you've stayed true to yourself the whole time, I'm just assuming. But for me, there was a time where I would take on a million clients, and not just photography, but graphic design and whatnot, because I thought that was the thing to do. And, you know, only recently, and a big part of that is the reason I have this podcast, is just finding out, you know, what resonates true with me. And I think that's so important for all of our listeners as well, is to find out what fits well with them and the lifestyle that they want to live.
Yeah, I always have advice that no one ever takes, but I keep giving it anyway in hopes that someone out there hear me. And that is, there's this fallacy, a failed premise in many photographers' minds, that because they happen to know their way around a camera, that is how they should be making their money. Now, I find that photographers are generally very cerebral, clever, multifaceted people. And there's no written rule that says just because you're handy with a camera does not mean you need to bend your financial lifestyle around that device. Mm-hmm. I really believe people should do other things to make money and keep the photography pure. And just do, because photography in a lot of ways doesn't take that much time. I mean, you can go out on the weekend and be incredibly productive. You go out at night. And if it's a passion project, like photography usually is, like let's say you have another job that's 40, 50, 60 hours a week. Well, you'll make time for photography. You know, there's always time for art and these real passion products. So you might want to do graphic design. You might want to design web pages. You know, probably visually oriented type things you could probably still do and make money at. And it gets very confusing. There's a big violent collision between art and, you know, fiduciary duties. And I find some people just really try to do anything they can to make money with their camera just because they happen to be skilled with their camera. But it doesn't have to be like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, maybe it takes a certain amount of courage to even get to that point, to admit it to themselves. Or when the pain of having a bunch of, you know, jobs that they don't like becomes so great that they're forced to confront the fact that maybe they should try to find another way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the end of the world. I mean, look, if you can't make, here's the thing. If you can't make money with photography, it doesn't at all mean you're a bad photographer. I think a lot of people have this sort of association, like, oh, if you can't make money, it means you're not a very good photographer. These things have nothing to do with one another. And I think, like, sometimes it might give people a little bit of a negative feeling, like, oh, maybe I'm really not a good photographer because I can't find anyone to pay me a lot of money to take photos. That's ridiculous. You know, there's a business kind of financial thing world that has nothing to do with the art world at all. And so still, that's another reason I think that people should do other things to make money outside of photography and just keep the photography pure, because you know, you people listening to me, you know when you take a good photo. You know you've got some great stuff in your portfolio that you're very proud of, and just because people won't pay you for it doesn't mean it's not any good. So please disassociate these two things from your mind, because it's just, these are two different worlds, and you know, never the twain shall meet.
Very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I think a part of it is doing kind of, it's like doing what God created you to do and not necessarily needing money to validate that. Or like you said, finding it, right, getting paid in different ways. Awesome. And, you know, earlier you mentioned that when you first started your blog, it was you and your mom reading it. And so what did you do? I guess what techniques or what strategy did you employ to help grow that?
I really let it grow by word of mouth. I guess there were a few tricky sounds, surreptitious, but some nifty things I did to help it grow. And I guess one of them is that a lot of my interest areas lay outside of photography. And I never read books on photography or art or anything like that. But really, I think one of my favorite areas is everything from, anthropology to science to economics. And I think having a very broad understanding of how the world works and how systems work is very important. Like, for example, I'm a beekeeper. I have about 250,000 bees. And, there is very little difference between the way a bee colony works and the way the internet works. And, the bees come back and they do a little waggle dance. They come back and they spin around clockwise multiple times. Every time they spin around clockwise is another 15 degrees east of the sun. And then they might spin around four times to the left, anti-clockwise. And then that means, how many multiples of 200 meters away the food is. And so they come back and they do this dance and it communicates it, and then other people do the waggle dance and it shows them where the good food sources are. Before you know it, you've got hundreds of thousands of bees going after a new blooming pear tree that just started blooming in the past few days. Well, you have to do the same thing with your blog, in that you have to enable other humans to do the waggle dance. You have to have a good food source to begin with. You have to have some fresh nectar, keep it fresh, and then have the right kind of tools and the right kind of incentive structure for people to go out and reshare this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, because, we live in a world where there's everything's aplenty. Most of us have, at least all of us on the internet, we all have shelter and we have, food and water and, we have the basic essentials of life. But now the food that, our bee colony desires is just really good content. And if you have really good food sources, you have to enable anything you can do to have the bees do their waggle dance to your content, or have ants leave their scent trails to your food source or whatever. So, I would really just keep thinking outside of the box and learn stuff that is orthogonal to, maybe what other photographers are doing.
And so it sounds then like that was a really cool illustration, by the way. It sounds like one of your main strategies was putting out awesome content that people would then go and tell other people about or share or help make it known.
That's right. Because the key is, you really make it when other people start talking about you more than you talk about you. Mm-hmm. It's always a little annoying to be self-promotional, this kind of stuff. I mean, if you have good stuff, you share it out there. I don't ever think of it as self-promotional. It's like, wow, look at what I created. It reminds me of my daughter. I have two daughters, but either of them might come up to me and show me this picture they made on construction paper. It's a little house and there's glitter glue and there's a rainbow and there's like a unicorn diving out the window or whatever. And they're super excited about it. They're running around showing me. Mm-hmm. There's no ego involved. They just made a creation. They brought something into the world and they come and show me. And so I think that kind of, I don't even think of that as self-promotion. I think you're just, hey, this is something I brought into the world, something I created. Isn't it cool? And, there's that kind of purity in there. And people say, yeah, that is cool. Let me share it with my friends. I like it too. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, those were the days, being a little kid with the drawing and just being so excited. Oh,
very cool.
Cool. Well, let's talk about some of the lessons that you've learned during your photography career. What's one thing that you wish you knew before you got into all of this professional stuff?
I guess one thing I wish I knew, that I kind of had the inkling that this was true, although it's only been confirmed in the past few years, is that the only constant is change. And you've got to become comfortable with the uncomfortable, with being uncomfortable, with never knowing what's going to be happening in the next few months or the next few years. This idea of stability is an illusion. Like, you think like, oh, if I could only, have 1, 2, and 3 happen, then everything would be set and I'd be good to go. Well, this is a fallacy, because your 1, 2, and 3 are going to change over the next few years, many times. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So, you know, the only constant thing you have is yourself, you know, and hopefully your family and close friends. But you're going to have to become extremely comfortable with being inside a very fluid environment and not let this cause you stress, but instead dance with it. You know, wake up every day and go like, okay, what's the world got for me today? And what have I got for the world? Because it's not going to be what you expect. And so there's this illusion of stability, like, oh, if I could only get this many followers, you know, if I could only get this many people on my blog, or if I could just make, you know, this much money off of clients and you know, retain 50% of my clients a year. Well, I mean, these are sort of amorphous goals, which may or may not happen. Probably they won't happen. And so you'll just always have these, you'll always be uncomfortable. You won't be able to live in the present. You'll always be worried about the future. You know, the future is just a fiction. It doesn't really exist. And so the more you stress about stability, is the less time you're being present. And the less you're being present, the less creative you are, the less productive you are, and the more likely it is that things will not work out the way they're supposed to.
Absolutely. How long did it take you to get used to constant change? I'll put it that way.
Well, I think the travel really helped with that, because you are physically putting yourself into an uncomfortable situation. You know, you're going to a place where no one speaks English, where all the rules are different, you know, maybe where you don't know if someone's going to knife you, give you a hug. And so you just become comfortable with that, and you're fascinated by it, right? You embrace it, you're open to it, because you, in these moments of being uncomfortable and constantly assessing what's around you, you are very present, right? You're not thinking about mistakes you made 3 years ago or something stupid you said to a friend 10 years ago. You're not, you know, worried about what's going to be happening a month or a year, 2 years from now. You're not thinking about like, oh, am I going to have to put my mom in a home and all this stuff. You know, you're there. You're walking through like a food market in Indonesia. There's crazy shit happening around you all the time. You're taking photos. You're drinking it all in, and you're fully present. You're like, whoa, like it's incredibly uncomfortable. You've never done anything like it before, but then you're just dancing with it. And at the end of it, you sit back and like, whoa, that was really awesome. You know, walking down that way and all the sights and smells and sounds, and maybe you got a few pictures out of it, but like, this is a fully present and fully uncomfortable moment, but that is what living is.
Absolutely. And I'm trying to think of, there was a study that I saw recently, and it basically said the less stressed you are with whatever's going on, the more creative and productive you end up being, which is absolutely, absolutely true. You know, if you're focused on, like you said, something you said to somebody that you regretted years ago, or living in the past, not focusing on experiencing the present and even being excited for the future, then that it can detract from your creativity if you're, you know, so focused on negative things.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Well, now tell us, what is a past mistake that you yourself have made, and how did you learn from it?
Well, let me think here.
I know I kind of put you on the spot.
Well, no, it's okay. Let me think about it. You know, I do make plenty of mistakes, either trying new things on the internet that don't work out. But, you know, maybe I'll think of a particular example here, but I think the overall lesson is that I'm very good at forgiving myself for my mistakes. And actually, I give permission out there to everyone. You can forgive yourself for your mistakes. We live in a world, you know what it's like, you come from a Catholic school upbringing too, mm-hmm. when you really shouldn't make mistakes, or you should be punished for your mistakes or whatever. Because if you punish yourself for your mistakes, you know, or do, you know, 100 Hail Marys or whatever, then then suddenly, you know, you are absolved and you can go on. You've learned your lesson. Because you have punished, either you've been externally punished or you have punished yourself enough to know that you will not make that mistake again, thanks to the punishment. Well, it doesn't have to be like that. You just immediately forgive yourself and say, ah, you know, I'll try to do better next time. And, you know, you don't have to worry about your friends judging. Real friends don't judge each other by, you know, fairly innocent, good-meaning mistakes. There's these 21 Pixar rules that they they pass around Pixar for every one of their movies. And they're great. And one of them is that, you know, the audience admires the hero only for trying, not for their successes. And as long as you're trying new things, and maybe they'll fail, don't worry about it. There's, you know, just take your ego out of it. Your real friends and close loved ones won't. Don't worry about failing in front of people. Don't worry about failing in front of yourself. You just got to go for it. And every now and then, it's going to work out. But you do have to try a bunch of different things. Over time, you'll make better decisions, I think. I like to think I generally make better decisions than I did in my 20s. But yeah, you just got to go for it.
And really, that's how we learn, through failure. Or if you don't want to call it failure, learning experience, let's say.
Yeah, for sure. I'm still trying to think of a specific example of a failure we had done. I think just because I tend to just move on and I just forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had a minute and I was, you know, I have a team here that helps me out at Stuck in Customs. We have a nice team of about a dozen people. They do everything from business operations to support to all that kind of stuff. Typically, they're the ones that have to deal with my mistakes. I could probably ask them. They'll tell you 10 mistakes in a second, by me.
Well, you know, let's move on. That is quite all right. And we're actually coming up on the end of the interview, which makes me sad because I could probably talk for another hour. But would you share with us a particular photography resource, a tool, an online course, a book, etc., software that you would recommend to our listeners today?
Yes, I will make a great recommendation. I think people should go check out this thing called The Arcanum.
Ah.
It's at www.thearcanum.com, A-R-C-A-N-U-M. And this is a site that I started along with two other founders about a year ago. And we call it the Magical Academy of Artistic Mastery. And basically what we've done is we brought back the master and apprentice style of learning art. We brought it back with a certain new kind of techno panache. And basically you combine Harry Potter and Uber and just a really fun learning environment for a school, for an art school. That's what you get here. And the way it works is you go sign up at thearcanum.com. You go fill out an application. It's kind of a really fun application. It's not too long, but you talk about your artistic goals. You might upload 5 sample photos. You know, what genres you're interested in, maybe good teaching or learning experiences you've had in the past. And then your application goes into this huge pot. It's free to apply and all this kind of stuff. And then what happens is we have these masters, these really good photographers, and they are constantly looking at this pot, this vat of applicants, and you know, looking for people that they might want to apprentice. And each master picks about 20 apprentices, and you come into their cohort. You come in at level zero photographer, and then you level up, you know, all the way to level 20 and beyond. And it's kind of like a game in that your master will give you quests, to, you know, personal quests. That's the big difference between this and other sites, is it's very personal. Every 5 levels, you'll have this video hangout with your master, and they will critique your work. They'll look at a handful of your photos and give you really good feedback. All of these critiques are recorded and available in our grand library. In fact, right now we have over 1,000 critiques in the grand library. It's unbelievable. And also you get to hang out with all your fellow apprentices, all of which will be at various levels. It's all kind of self-paced. So you're all kind of in it together. And it's, as far as we can tell, we really got the tiger by the tail. We've got about 800 active apprentices now. People are loving it. You know, they're sending us these very teary emails, how their life has been changed, how they finally have a group of people to hang out with, and they have a master that is really guiding them along, showing them their blind spots. But yeah, I mean, the Arcanum is unbelievable. I mean, people can choose for themselves and check it out, but really, it's fantastic.
The Magical Academy of Artistic Mastery, thearcanum.com. Yes, I can definitely vouch for that. You have some awesome masters up there. I interviewed Karen Hutton, one of the early ones, and one or two others, I believe, for this podcast. You guys are doing some awesome things over there.
Well, you know, the reason that we started it, okay, this will sound super new agey. Well, there's two reasons I started it. I'll start out with the practical one, and then I'll go to the new agey one. The practical one is that, you know, I've been selling tutorials on my site for years, and they've been great. But in a way, it's really impersonal, because you're sitting there at home, and you're kind of leaning back, and you're hearing my voice and watching me do stuff. And it's great and educational, all that stuff, but it's you're not actually talking to me. You know, you're hearing a recording of me, which I think we could do better than that, you know? And that's what a lot of people tend to be doing, these sort of, it's even like lynda.com, where you just go and you just watch videos, you know, you're just kind of leaning back watching videos. Well, this is much more personal, of course, because you have a master, you know, like a Pilates teacher or a Kung Fu teacher at your dojo. And if you don't come to class for a few weeks, they might send you an email, say, what's up, get in here, you know, we got to work on your yellow belt. Well, so that's the big difference, that this is just much more personal, and people learn better in groups and when they are personally challenged. And the new agey reason is because I really think that the more creative people are and the more they create art, the more present and the more conscious they are. And I do believe there's sort of this global consciousness that's happening. And I do believe that the longer you spend every day being present and taking photos and creating, the more you're just kind of in the flow of the way you're supposed to be in a naturally human kind of way. Mm-hmm. And all these other problems of life kind of fall away when you are present and conscious. I think the more people we can get into this creative mode and finding themselves and creating themselves and being present, the better it is for the entire world. So this is sort of the other angle of it. Right. Well, I'm almost everywhere as Trey Ratcliffe, you know, everywhere from Instagram to Snapchat to whatevs. I always have the main blog at stuckincustoms.com, but I'm generally easy to find anywhere. I think of the YouTube channel is youtube.com/stuckincustoms, Trey Ratcliffe. But that's a good source. We're always putting up a bunch of cool free videos on there and all kinds of crazy stuff. But yeah, I would be honored if people would follow me on any one of them. And, you know, if people have questions, you can always tweet me or whatever. I do read everything. I don't always get a chance to respond, but I don't have like a company or an assistant that pretends to tweet for me. Or it's always really, so if you ever hear from me, it's really me.
Good to know. We appreciate that. We really do.
Good.
Awesome. Well, just thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, Trey. I really, really enjoyed it.
Hey, no problem. I enjoyed it too. Nice getting to know you.
Awesome. Likewise. Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing. Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource center.